Hey, everybody. It's on the Charlie Kirk Show. It is my conversation from Dream City Church at Freedom Night in America, brought to you by TPUSA Faith at tpusafaith.com, with one of my favorite people, Dr. Miriam Grossman. She is incredible. I've been promoting her book for quite some time. This is a comprehensive A to Z conversation on the trans issue. Take notes, listen carefully, listen to it twice, text it to your friends. It is a parent's guide out of the trans delusion. Every parent in the country should listen to this conversation. So text it to your fellow parent friends, listen carefully, take notes. You are going to learn a lot about the sinister aspect of the trans agenda and how it's infecting our country. Become a member today, members.charliekirk.com. There's no advertisers on these Sunday episodes, so go to members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Hello, everybody. How we doing? All right. So I am not going to speak for long here. We have a very special guest. Please take a seat, everybody. And I was in Nebraska yesterday. Anyone been covering my Nebraska stuff lately? There's been a lot going on there. I'll tell you that story later once it's completed. But I have been going to college campuses, as you know, for 11 years, and following, especially the last couple of years, this trans movement. And we were told that, you know, it's just for adults, not a big deal. And now we see the reality that it is institutionalized in our schools. In our medical practice, we see families now being bombarded with this idea that all of a sudden your son is your daughter and your daughter is your son. And it is here in local schools. It is in Scottsdale Unified School District. It is in the local Phoenix schools. And when one of these topics comes up, especially one that is pushed so aggressively and ferociously, I want to make sure that I can learn from the best possible people out there. And this is a topic that impacts so many different things. It impacts children. It impacts the family. It impacts freedom of speech. It impacts the bond that you have between your child. It impacts whether or not we are going to defend children from the predators that are going after them to try and castrate them. And there is one individual that I came across. She came on my show, and I told our team, I said, she's spectacular. And she's different. Because unlike a lot of these wacky people that go on TV that talk about the trans issue, she's actually a doctor, not like a Jill Biden doctor, like actually a doctor. And she's a child psychiatrist who's been in the room when a 14-year-old says, I'm a boy now. When a family comes in panic and says, we've been to three different specialists and they say, my son has to now go on hormone blockers, cross-sex hormones, and potentially go for surgery. And she is a person of courage, of incredible clarity. Her book, Lost in Transnation, that's why I have my hands full here, because I want to make sure I promote the book, is, I'm almost done with it. It is the prominent book, the premier book, where you, if you want to get the download of exactly how sinister and evil it is, this is the book. And I'm just thrilled that she's here tonight. We're going to dialogue for quite some time. I don't know if we're going to have time to get to questions because there's so much to cover. And this will motivate you for next year. I have a mission. I want you guys to help join us in this mission that we have to shut down every gender-affirming care clinic in Arizona. And we got to get them all shut down. And you will be motivated to do that. Get on your feet and join me in welcoming Dr. Miriam Grossman. Dr. Grossman, welcome to Arizona.
I'm thrilled to be here, absolutely thrilled.
And I want to just reiterate, Dr. Grossman is a woman of courage. So many doctors are staying silent during this just hideous moment where they're afraid of the backlash. Dr. Grossman has spoke out. She is leading the charge. So Dr. Grossman, I want to get right into it. How did we get here? In your book, Lost in Translation, you dedicate an entire chapter to an individual by the name of John Money. Educate our audience on who this person was.
Well, I'm certainly going to do that. I want to just show one slide because I want to start at the very beginning. The beginning, okay? Sex is not assigned at birth. Sex is established at conception. The moment that the egg and the sperm unite, you have a new life. That life is either male or female. Those are the two choices. Male or female. That is permanent. That is never going to change. So that is the beginning of everything. And that's what I always want people to keep in mind as they're listening to this whole, how should I call it, a very dark chapter in medicine. A very dark chapter. So how it started, John Money. John Money was a psychologist from New Zealand. His interest was hermaphrodites. Hermaphrodites is the old term that was used for very, very rare individuals that at the time they're born, they have ambiguous genitalia, and it's impossible to say for sure if they are male or female. So they used to be called hermaphrodites. They're now called intersex. Still extremely, extremely rare. Dr. Money became interested in these babies and how they should be raised. Because when a child is born, back then, no ultrasounds, obviously, it was really was at birth then, that one of these kids was born and the doctors didn't know if it was a boy or a girl for sure. It was a medical emergency and it was a family crisis. What do you tell the family? What's the family going to tell the other kids, the grandparents, the whole world? So Dr. Money became a specialist in this area. Now, he came up with a theory. John Money's theory is that everyone is born neutral. He called it gender neutral. And he used the word gender for the very first time to apply to humans. Because before that, gender was a grammatical term that was used, you know, in French and Spanish, right? In many languages, nouns are either feminine or masculine. And that's how the word gender was originally used. John Money came along, he took that word, and he applied it to humans. And he said that gender is how a person feels about whether they are male or female, as opposed to their biology. Two separate things. It was his brainchild, his idea, and he had good reason to come up with that theory, as you've read.
Yes, and Dr. Grossman, let's go deeper into this. He started kind of on the fringes, but then became celebrated and was funded by our government for 25 years.
Correct.
And his theory was then put to the test in a horrific, now very public example, what was called the Money Twin Experiment.
Correct.
Tell us about this.
Okay, so he proposed that we are all born gender neutral, and that meant that a boy had the potential of living his life as a girl and vice versa, all depending on the first 3 years of life, how they would be influenced by their environment. So it was 100% he proposed. It was, none of it was biology. It was all environment. It was a social construction. So the typically masculine traits like, you know, preferring rough and tumble play and, I don't know, trucks and, you know, girls liking makeup and dolls. And he said that's all a social construction. It was all put on this neutral infant when he or she was born. So that was his theory. Now, there's not much really that he could do with it, because how do you prove something like that? But he was a very eminent, respected psychologist at Johns Hopkins, and he opened a clinic for these kids who were ambiguous. Their genitalia was ambiguous, and he, you know, ran the team that would endocrinologists and surgeons decide how to help these kids. What happened is that a family appeared in his office one day, a family by the name of Reimer, and they came from Winnipeg, Canada, a blue-collar family, young, 20, 21 years old with the parents, and they had gone through a terrible tragedy in which they gave birth to twin boys. They were completely healthy. They took the kids to be circumcised at 8 months, and the first boy that they brought in for the circumcision, the equipment had a malfunction, and the penis was burnt off. The boy's penis was burnt off at the age of 8 months. The other boy, his twin, did not go through the procedure, obviously. They went home. They were devastated. What are we going to do with this child? How are we going to raise him? How will he ever have a normal life? And they got various advice, but in general, no one really was sure about what to tell them. They one day were watching television. This was in the 60s. And they see John Money on there, Professor John Money, speaking, sophisticated, you know, well-spoken, sounds completely reliable, a medical authority, and he says that a boy can be successfully raised as a girl as long as the process starts early enough. They thought, God sent us Dr. Money. And they immediately arranged to take their twins down to Baltimore and go to Johns Hopkins and see Dr. Money. They thought that he was the answer to their prayers. The truth was that they were the answer to his prayers, because he was looking for fame, he was looking for recognition, and he wanted to prove his gender theory was correct. And look who shows up on his doorstep. The perfect sample. These identical twins, raised in the same environment, but one, he was going to advise the parents to raise the one who went through the accident as a girl. And therefore, he had the potential here, John Money, of finding a proof of concept, let's call it, of his theory that a boy, now these are normal boys. These are not kids who are hermaphrodites or intersex or anything. These were normal boys. But he was saying that the boy with no penis can be successfully raised as a girl. He told the parents that the boy should be castrated. So, in other words, the penis had been obliterated during the circumcision. But the boy still had testicles. John Money said, we have to remove the testicles. That's castration. We have to do a preliminary surgery so that this child will look a little bit like a girl in terms of genitalia. You're going to change his name from Bruce to Brenda. Well, they picked the name Brenda. That wasn't Dr. Money. You're going to dress Brenda in pink outfits with frilly frills and raise her as a girl alongside her twin brother. And so they did. They did exactly what Dr. Money told them to. And they said years later the mom was interviewed on Oprah, I think it was, in the 90s. And she said, we looked at John Money like he was God. And so, of course, we did whatever he told us to do. Now, what happened is a long story. It's a book in and of itself. We'd be here all day talking about it. I'll just shorten this by saying that John Money began to report this experiment as a great success when the twins were about 6 years old. And he went out publicly. He wrote papers. He gave speeches. It was reported in, you know, the lay press as well, not just the professional associations. And he claimed that this girl, Brenda, was thriving. She felt like a girl. She was doing great in school with friends. She was a bit of a tomboy, but she was thriving as a girl. And he continued to report this experiment as a success year after year. And every year, the parents, the Reimer parents, would bring the twins down to Dr. Money for a checkup and then go home and continue. Well, P.S., it was not at all a big success. Brenda was absolutely miserable. Brenda was so masculine in terms of, and I'll say her, I don't know what pronoun to use, but in terms of Brenda's interests and what she preferred, the toys and, you know, the activities and what she wanted, you know, the outfits that she wanted to wear. She took her twin brother's toys. She was aggressive. She got into fights. She didn't have any friends, but the kids at school called her cave woman because her mannerisms and the way that she walked were so masculine. She suffered terribly. And when time came for her to enter puberty, John Money arranged for her to be put on estrogen so that she would begin to grow breasts. And he tried to convince her. He worked very hard at convincing her to have surgery so that she would have a faux vagina. And that's where she put her foot down. And she ran out of John Money's office to never return. She was so miserable that she became suicidal, and her psychiatrist at the time told her parents that they must tell her the truth. They must tell both twins the truth. And they did. They sat them down. Each parent took a different twin, and they took them out and explained to them what had happened. And Brenda, how did she feel at that moment when she found out she had been born a boy? She described later on that she felt overwhelming relief. Otherwise, she said she felt like she was going crazy. She knew she wasn't a girl. And so she felt incredible relief to learn about what had happened. And of course, she was devastated as well. But she was relieved, and she immediately picked a new name. She didn't go back to Bruce. She picked the name David. Do you remember that? Why the name David? Because she said, he said, all my life, I feel like I've been fighting this giant, like David fought Goliath. So he returned to David. He obviously stopped the estrogen. He had a number of surgeries on his genitals, and he lived as a boy and a young man. He ended up getting married. He adopted his wife's three children, and it did sound for a while as if this was going to have a happy ending. However, these boys were so damaged. Apart from the fact that they were used for this experiment, every time they went down to see John Money, he was sexually abusing them. Okay, he was a monster. John Money was a wicked man.
And I want to just interject for a second. John Money is considered to be a hero in every one of your taxpayer-funded universities. He is the godfather of this entire transgender craze. And I want, that story is so important for you to know, because we are living through a consecutive multi-decade lie where even he was not able to prove his hypothesis with the perfect set. In fact, he ran away from this. It was debunked. And so everything we're living through right now is a byproduct of this one individual that needs to become a household name, where the idea of gender came from him, the concept of transgender. And he was, as you say, a monster and vile, didn't care about the truth, didn't care about children. And then Dr. Grossman talked about how, because he was so, quote, well-respected, he started a cottage industry of gender and transgender care that has now completely gone out of control.
Okay, so I want to explain two things. You see, David didn't go public with his story for like 20, 25 years.
That's important.
That's very important, because during all those years, and you know what? His mom wrote to John Money when David was 14 and they told him that he was a boy, and he immediately switched to being David. His mother wrote a letter. This is in the 70s. Maybe the early 80s. And she wrote him a letter to John Money telling him that this had happened, that his experiment was not a success. His experiment was a failure. He continued to report the experiment a huge success. And so what happened is that in all these fields of medicine and social sciences, psychology, sociology, you name it, his idea that there was this thing called gender, which was completely separate from biology, it became canonized, let's say. It became, everyone accepted it as truth.
As dogma.
As dogma. And so it kind of evolved over the years, and it entered into, feminism, and there was, into the universities, into our sex education, which is where I discovered it. And it's basically why we are where we are right now. Now, another thing that I want to explain about John Money is that he had his own reasons for coming up with this theory that gender is separate from sex. His reason is because he himself was very uncomfortable with being a man. He had grown up in a farm in New Zealand, and his father was a raging, abusive alcoholic who used to beat him and beat his mother. John Money was a small, delicate boy, obviously very unlike his father. And in his child's mind, which is what children do, they think, well, if that's a man, I don't want to be a man. I want to be like my gentle mom and my aunt, who was also living in the same household. I don't want to be like this monster alcoholic father who kills animals, shoots birds in the garden, beats up his mother, beat up him. So John Money was very honest about it. He wrote in one of his books that he feels that his manhood, his male physicality, is vile. So these days we would call that gender dysphoria.
And so then Dr. Grossman, talk then about how you came in contact with this and how now the entire scientific and medical community has been captured by this. This started as a contagion that John Money launched, and it is now at Phoenix Children's Hospital. It is now at Mayo Clinic. It is now at the American Medical Association, the American Association of Pediatrics. It is now the standard care. And I just want to make this set in. If you go to a run-of-the-mill pediatrician here in Phoenix and your child says, as a daughter, I am now a boy, or I am now a girl, or vice versa, the standard care thanks to John Money's original sin, is not watchful waiting, and we'll get into all of that, but it's medication, cross-sex hormones, testosterone, estrogen, and eventually surgery. So Dr. Grossman, talk about how you came across this and how captured our medical institutions have become.
Okay, so I came across all this in 2008 when I was studying sex education because I was a psychiatrist at UCLA and my patients there were UCLA students. And so many kids had an STD that I couldn't understand what, especially the young women. I wanted to see what are kids being told about preserving their sexual health. So I started digging into what kids are told by Planned Parenthood and other organizations that get millions and millions of our tax dollars in order to create these curricula. And lo and behold, I mean, I discovered a lot about that, and that was another book that I wrote. But one of the things I discovered is this thing about gender, and that kids were being told in a matter-of-fact way, not that this is a theory and that, you know, maybe, maybe not. No, it's always presented with incredibly arrogant certainty, authority. And it's simply not true. So what I discovered in 2008 that kids were being told is this idea of gender being separate from one's physical body. And it's just, you know, there are people, it's a normal variant when individuals do not feel comfortable with their sex. And when that happens, then their bodies have to be brought into alignment with their feelings. And I just thought, what the heck? We are telling kids that? Kids who need stability in terms of their identity? Kids who need to hear the truth about biology and about development? What is this? And that's how I slowly, you know, got into it. I discovered, you know, to what degree the medical organizations, including my own American Psychiatric Association, American Psychological Association, have been taken over. Now, how does that happen? You know, you were mentioning to me earlier that a lot of people think it's like a conspiracy theory to suggest that an organization like the American Academy of Pediatrics, 67,000 members, has been taken over by radical gender ideology. How could that be? I'll tell you exactly how that can be. The way it happens is that you have a small number of activist doctors, and they have a certain agenda that they wish to steamroll through without discussion, without debate, without hearing from rank and file members of the organization. And they do exactly that. So the way that these medical organizations are structured is that if they say, for example, the American Academy of Pediatrics is going to come out with a policy statement, you know, saying that sex is assigned at birth and there's people who are cisgender, there's people who are non-binary, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How does that happen, such a policy statement? Well, in the American Academy of Pediatrics, it actually happened because there was one person, one activist pediatrician, who wrote these guidelines in 2018. They were the most radical, everything that you hear, everything that your kids hear, all the jargon, all the cisgender and non-binary and, you know, puberty blockers are completely reversible, and we're just giving kids the time to think, and these are just all normal variants. All of that stuff was written by one pediatrician by the name of Jason Rafferty. Jason Rafferty was a young guy, he's still a young guy, but he was, at that time, I think he was still in training to become a child psychiatrist. He's a pediatrician and he's a child psychiatrist. Anyway, I'm giving too many details. He wrote this policy statement, and the LGBT committee of maybe 10 or 12 individuals agreed to it. And then the board of directors of the American Academy of Pediatrics agreed to it. And there you go. It's published.
So what now is I hate to use the word normal, but standard care for, let's say, right here in Phoenix, 15-year-old gets brought in by their parents. I see a TikTok video. By the way, there's a 5,000% increase in transgender youth. Right? Is that correct?
Yeah,
Do you have a slide on that, Dr. Grossman?
Yes, the person.
See, I'm segueing nicely to it. So,
oh, there we go.
Does that look normal, everybody?
Okay, this is showing the 5,000% increase.
This is not a little issue, everybody. This, if you have a child, they will come in contact with the social contagion. I'm going to say something that might be controversial. The trans virus is a greater threat to them than COVID-19 ever was. I'm going to say that. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's absolutely true. Yes. Because COVID is not a threat to... Well, we're not getting into COVID.
No, I don't want to, but I'm just saying that... That's why I tried to. If you're a 13-year-old, I have much greater concern you are going to get under the trans ideology virus than COVID-19 be a threat. Yeah.
And I can tell you, in terms of it being what is a social contagion? A social contagion is well known in psychology. It's when feelings, beliefs, or behaviors spread within a friend group, and that friend group can be a real friend group, like in person, but it can also be a friend group online. Now, I can tell you that I have patients. I had a young woman say to me that she never experienced any discomfort. She identified as a boy, I guess, or non-binary. It's a nonsense term, but whatever it was, she didn't identify as a girl. And she told me that she had never had unhappiness or dysphoria about her hips. It was always her breasts and other things. She never had any issues with her hips. She has a friend who's also a girl identifying as a boy. And this friend, she told me, goes on and on and on about how much she hates her hips. Lo and behold, my patient now has dysphoria about her hips. Okay, so these things spread. And that's the only way that we would see something like that. This is not an organic process of a condition spreading within a culture, within a society. This is a contagion of kids, mostly girls, not all girls, maybe 60%, 65% of these kids are girls, but I don't want to downplay the risk to boys. There's a huge risk to boys as well. But they're hearing about it. They're hearing about it at school, online. I don't have to tell you. You hear it. I'm at Target. I mean, it's everywhere.
And the Pittsburgh example. What was it? 3 out of 30 children in the Pittsburgh Unified School District are transgender. Is that correct? So 1 out of 10.
Well, I think what they did is they were identifying as either, as non, something that their biology was not. I mean, now there's so many options, Charlie. You don't have to be transgender.
It's almost as if you are not identifying as one of these things, you're missing out. In fact, it is a badge of honor. They go around, they say, well, I'm pansexual or I'm trans this or that. Now, Dr. Grossman, here's where you are at your best. You're a child psychiatrist. Every one of these individuals have untreated, undiagnosed, or ignored underlying mental health issues that get cast aside, and instead they go straight to interventions based on
okay.
This.
So a majority do have comorbid psychiatric conditions. Not every single, but a majority for sure, have longstanding anxiety, depression. They've been through trauma. They've had family issues. They may be on the autism spectrum, which places a child at increased risk to be attracted to this cult, let's call it, very similar to a cult. So if your kid is on the autism spectrum, you need to know that your kid is more vulnerable to this. There's different reasons for that. But Oh, so they have comorbid conditions. And what happens is they walk into the pediatrician's office. And, you know, what the pediatricians do these days, as I'm sure you're aware, when your kid reaches puberty or just before, you know, they have this thing where they ask the parent to leave. I haven't dealt with that.
But should the parent, how should parents deal with that?
Okay. Well, first of all, I would say you have to vet your pediatrician. I mean, you have to find out your pediatrician's position regarding this stuff. And if you haven't, or if your pediatrician's position is not what it should be, then you don't want to have to use that pediatrician. Now, some people are stuck. They're in an HMO, whatever it may be. They may not have a choice. But you can refuse to leave that room. Because when you leave, what the pediatrician is asking, first of all, they're asking, do you have sex? If you have sex, do you have sex with boys, girls, or both? Do you, what is your gender identity? Are you do you feel comfortable being a boy, comfortable being a girl? And they're going in this direction of the whole gender issue. And they may not, you know, if your child says, well, I'm going to tell you this, but I don't want you telling my mom and dad, well, they may very well not tell you about it. So, you know, there's a wedge that is placed, and this happens at school, obviously, as well. This is a movement that is anti-nuclear family. And they place a wedge between parents and children at a time that the kids need their parents more than anybody else. And so it's extremely destructive. But I think what you were getting at, Charlie, was that when these kids are put on the assembly line and they are told that, you know, you can pick a new name and new pronouns and everyone's going to honor that, and you can you know, use the boys' restroom, and you can do all these things as if you're a boy. Their mental health issues end up being pushed to the side and ignored. And these are the very issues that in most cases are the cause of their gender confusion.
Now, Dr. Grossman, I want you to talk about watchful waiting. You make the contention that puberty is not the problem. Puberty is the solution. They want to give puberty blockers to these children when your research, your experience, and also just practical knowledge and common sense is that some of these individuals might grow out of or break out of this problem.
Yes.
I want you to understand how evil this is. We are doing irreversible damage, mass sterilization for kids that are engaging in a fad. Mass sterilization campaign. When we used to have a way to handle this, Dr. Grossman, which was watchful waiting. Let's wait a little bit. See if they're going to grow out of it. See if it's a friend group. Is it a social media site? Is it the school they're going to? In fact, you talk in the book, sometimes parents move school districts. They move states.
They leave the country.
Leave the country. And because I hope you guys understand, America is now the worst on this topic
and
in
Canada,
the Western.
Canada.
Canada is its own. It's like North Korea, but
yeah, it's pretty bad.
It's really bad.
Yeah. So, yeah, the point is that, you know, we've known for decades in psychiatry that there were very rare individuals whose experience of themselves is that they are in the wrong body, and the approach was always, at least with the children, you know, let me just tell you this. 20 years ago, there were only 3 clinics to help families that had kids like this who were struggling. Not 3 clinics in the U.S., 3 clinics in the entire world. That's how rare this was. Okay, there was this clinic in London that was closed recently, the Tavistock Clinic, closed. A huge scandal. There was a clinic in the Netherlands, in Holland, and there was a clinic in Toronto. So 20 years ago, there was not even one clinic in the U.S. The first clinic in the U.S. was in Boston in 2007. So what was found with those kids was that so that's watchful waiting means that you give the child emotional support. You might say to the child, well, yes, you're a boy who feels like a girl, but you are still a boy. And we're going to help you with those feelings. And maybe we're going to allow you occasionally at home to wear a dress, to wear a princess outfit. And you kind of help the family through those years. And if these kids have the opportunity to go through normal puberty, the vast majority of them will outgrow this unhappiness with their bodies. Many of them are gay and lesbian, but they no longer want to be in a different body. But that is because they went through puberty. Puberty is not a disorder. It's not a disease. It is the most important period of development that we go through, aside from development in the womb. And so we need to go through puberty to become an adult. Puberty is not only about changing, developing secondary sex characteristics such as facial hair and lowered voice and breasts and fat redistribution. I mean, that's part of puberty. But a lot of what's going on in puberty, we don't see. The brain, there's an explosion of development in the brain. Now, could that possibly be related to the fact that when people reach young adulthood, they realize, like, hey, you know what? I'm actually okay with my body. Because they've been permitted to go through these surges of hormones, of estrogen and testosterone. Those hormones are not just going to the sexual organs. They're going all around the body. They're affecting the cardiac system, the lungs, the liver, and the brain. Okay, there's an incredible, what was that show called in which those houses would be like an extreme makeover? What was it called? Extreme makeover, right?
Yes.
There's an extreme makeover of the brain during puberty. Kids have to go through puberty. And what we're doing is we're putting these kids on puberty sometimes as early as 8 or 9 years old. Because all these organizations have come out and said that at the very first sign of puberty, which in some kids is early, we need to stop that puberty because it's the wrong puberty. They call it the wrong puberty. There's no wrong body. There's no wrong puberty.
So Dr. Grossman, I think it's important for people to understand that right now, the United Kingdom just came out and they said no more puberty blockers for children. And we're not one to applaud, the British universal healthcare system. Europe is retreating from this right now. Joe Biden and Admiral Levine have come out and they have said that child access to hormones, to cross-sex hormones, to testosterone, estrogen, Joe Biden said it's basically a sin if you do not allow children access to these pharmacological interventions.
Yes, they call it life-saving. They call it medical care. And I have to say, I really don't know. The gig is up. I don't know how long they can continue. There's just too much every few days. Like you said, just today, there was this big news out of the United Kingdom. The CAS report came out. Incredibly important. This pediatrician was assigned by the health system there to study what went on in the clinic that had to be closed down. That's this clinic, by the way. These numbers here are from the Tavistock Clinic.
That's one clinic.
One clinic. Yeah. Okay, so she took a few years and had a big team of people do this study. And she came out with her conclusions that said, we have no evidence that these medical interventions in kids, and even not only medical interventions, the social, the name and pronoun thing, there's no evidence that in the long term these help. To the contrary, the kids that are socially transitioned and they're allowed to, you know, we do the pronouns and the names and all the rest of it, they are much more likely than the peers that are not socially transitioned to go ahead with being medicalized. So they're being put on a path toward harm.
And so then what is pushing these people? This is not supported by the majority of Americans. It's not rooted in science. Yet there are committed ideologues that are insistent. This is a cult-like religion. This is something greater than medicine or science at play here.
Yes, it is. Well, there's no medicine or science that supports it. I mean, they try to spin everything. They're trying to spin now, you know, what is male and female and say that it's on this huge spectrum. What's behind it? Well, now you're getting into sort of macro question. I generally deal mostly with the micro, which is the family, the child, what's happening in the organizations. The macro question of, you know, what is behind this? So, you know, first of all, the money. Let's not forget about all the money that's behind it. So every child who's medicalized, who's put on puberty blockers, which almost always is followed by cross-sex hormones, is worth $1 million because it's lifelong. Right? You're put on these cross-sex hormones, estrogen or testosterone, you have to stay on them your whole life. So I'm told that's going to be about $1 million per child. And that's to say nothing of all the surgeries. So there's a lot of money behind it. There's also a lot of money in the fact that these people are going to be sterile. And so when they wake up in their 20s and 30s and realize they want biological children, what are they going to do? Surrogacy, assisted reproductive technology is just exploding. And that's also going to be billions. So you're creating a population of consumers of these technological interventions. Now, then there are also people who think that as humans, we are going to evolve beyond humanity, humanity 2.0, and we are going to defy biology. We are going to enter a world in which we're not limited by our biology. Okay, we will live forever. We can download. There's somebody who's working at creating robots in which you download a person's all their experiences, the way that, you know, what they've been through, their beliefs, the way that they talk, the way that they act. And he downloads it. This is Martine Rothblatt. Okay, this individual, he's a multi, I don't know, billionaire. And he is
transgender woman.
Yeah, he's a man,
yes,
who lives as a woman.
I was trying to think. By the way, here's how you always figure it out. If it's trans man, just it's fake man, trans woman, fake woman. So that's, you just add the word trans, just add fake, and then you go, oh, okay, got it. So.
Right. But the thing
it's just a little helpful guide, because I get confused too. So.
He is a brilliant and very accomplished, successful, you know, biotech person, big time. And you can go on YouTube and see a interview with this robot. It's actually just a head, but it's his wife. So his wife is talking to this head that sort of looks like her. Have you seen it?
Yeah. And what you're talking about here, this is the entrance into what is called transhumanism. And there's an ideological component that comes out of the Silicon Valley godless world where they say that we can transcend nature. And their belief is that nature is not created, it was an accident. So why should we not use the will of humans to be able to supersede that so that we can be like gods?
You know, it reminds me, I don't know about you, but it's the Tower of Babel, right? That was...
I think it's Genesis 11. I totally agree, which is Nimrod says we're going to build a city in our name. And God doesn't like it when people do that, by the way. God does not like it when you try to build a city in your name.
Okay, so, you know, that is a part of it. But there's many things that are at play here. But again, you know, I don't want to leave people in despair because I really think there's reason to feel optimistic. I have never been as optimistic. I mean, look, there's a huge body count and there's just horrific stories that I have just, you know, witnessed myself and heard myself. My book, by the way, is dedicated to the parents that have been through this. You'll see in the beginning, I have their names. But I do want to leave on a positive note.
Yes. So we have a little bit, we have time for two parts. I want to end on the verse. But first, Doctor, I want to get into the super micro for marching orders. How can parents, you know, inoculate themselves from this? And then part B, what to do? Fire alarm, niece, nephew, your daughter, what happens if they come home and they say those words, "Mommy, I am actually a boy"?
Okay. So a good part of my book is about this, but I will tell you that there's a lot you can do to inoculate your family against this. And you want to start as early as possible. If you have teenagers, you can still, obviously, you're going to want to do this as well. But if you have younger children, you want them to understand that they were a boy or a girl from the very first moment that they were created on this earth. And you want them to hear that a lot, so that when they do eventually hear that phrase, "sex assigned at birth," your kid is going to go like, "Huh? That's not true. Sex is not assigned at birth at all." So they begin to be able to recognize the lies and the indoctrination. The other things that you can do to even young children is to remind them that it's wonderful to be a boy or a girl, and there's also many ways of being a boy or a girl. There isn't just one way of being a girl. And there are girls that are more what we would call masculine or whatever, that's personality. And we want our girls and boys to know that they don't have to fit into this box. Oh, you don't like, you know, you don't like sports? Oh, you're into fashion or, I don't know, cooking or whatever it may be? Maybe you're not a boy. This is what kids are hearing now. So you want early on to tell kids that there's many different ways of being a girl or a boy, and that the way that they are is 100% fine. And they shouldn't believe what anyone says. Now, you want your kids, and this is not only true for gender, but for many other subjects, obviously, to be aware that, unfortunately, there's a lot of stuff out there in the world, including maybe in their classroom, that they can't 100% accept. They have to come home. Home has to be the basis for their information. And that doesn't mean you need to have all the answers, because none of us have all the answers. What you do need to be able to say to your kid is, you know what? That is a great question. I don't know the answer right now, but boy, I'm going to go find it for you. And then you go and do your research. You don't have to know all the answers. And also, it's okay to feel a little bit awkward and embarrassed. That's fine. You can acknowledge it. Like, whoa, you know, we've never talked about these things, but I'm so glad you're bringing it up. I mean, someone, you know, one of your kids may come home tomorrow and say, You know what? In school, in my class, there's this girl. I've known her for years. We're now supposed to call her by a boy's name. We're supposed to use he, him pronouns. He's going to be using the boy's bathroom. Like, whoa, what is this all about? I'm finding that you want to be able to talk to your child about it. And you want to have conversations, even if it's not them coming home, God forbid, and saying, Mom, Dad, I'm no longer your daughter, I'm your son. You want to have, you want to be educated so that you have the information. But for that first conversation, you want to be curious. Oh, tell me more. I want to learn more. What exactly happened? What exactly are you thinking? Where did you hear about this? And you want to be loving and not necessarily loving in a way that's accepting, oh, I'm going to immediately call you by a new name and new pronouns. No, no. In fact, you're not going to do that right now because this is a really big deal.
That's a big thing.
You understand that this is what they want right now, but you're not going to give them, just like in many other ways, you don't give them everything they want. This is another area that, you know, your father and I, your mom and I, we need to do a lot of research. And we're going to become experts. We're going to end up knowing so much about this subject, but right now, it's just a time to have conversations. You may not like what I have to say about this, but it's possible in a family to have disagreements about big things and to remain loving and supportive, even with those disagreements. I mean, look, you can say, my sister's a big Democrat. I'm a Trump person. We're still friends. I wasn't talking about my own family.
Doctor, you also say don't freak out in that first conversation.
Do not freak out.
You could freak out later, scream into the pillow.
Right. You can freak out later. You want to try and to stay calm and curious. You can always freak out later, but just not around your kid, because that first conversation is important. Yes. Your child is nervous coming to you with that conversation. And your child is curious about how you're going to respond. And your child has been told that if your parent doesn't accept you, that means your parent doesn't love you. So,
that's right. And they've been told that by teachers, guidance counselors, TikTok friends, community. So they're going in, bracing for impact, to just rebel away. And if you live in California or watching online, they can just basically leave the home at age 12 now. That's not an exaggeration. They have transgender refugee camps. Am I right, Dr. Grossman? They are building halfway homes, basically. Well, that's what they're framed as, which is that if you believe that your parents are not accepting what you say that you are, they have places where these 12, 13, and 14-year-olds
can... Well, right, from out of state. Also.
Well, that's
from
correct.
From out of state,
yes. Then they can go leave state and the state and get surgical interventions.
It's a very dark time that we're living in. It's a dangerous time, but there is so much that you can do. And you want to, look, no relationship is perfect, but you want, parents have to walk this tightrope if they have a child who's made this announcement. And they want, the tightrope is, I'm loving you, I'm supportive of you, you're everything to me, but I'm not letting go of reality. That's the tightrope that you walk.
Would you like to go to the verse as we conclude?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the way that I want to conclude is on a positive note. And I'm sincere here. I'm not just making this up. I really am optimistic. But the reason why we know that this is going to end okay is because we know that in the end, truth prevails. Yeah.
And if you want to stand up, you can if you want to.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we have this you know, this line from Proverbs, and I gave you the Hebrew there, and it basically says that truth is forever, and lies are momentary. Okay, lies can't live forever. And now I want to give you a little Hebrew lesson. And the lesson is, not yet, the lesson is about the word, the Hebrew words for truth and falsehood. So now next slide. Okay. So over here is the word for truth, falsehood. Now, we are told in the Talmud, which was written at least 1,500 years ago, that there's a message in these letters for these words. Now, these letters in Hebrew, there's three letters here, and they all are standing firm on the ground. They either have this two feet that are standing firm, or this strong base, and they're all sitting firmly on the ground. Whereas this word, this is the word sheker, which means falsehood in Hebrew. Look at those three letters. They are precarious. They're just kind of, they have either one foot that they're standing on, or they have this sort of vertex angle. And this teaches us that falsehood, sheker, cannot live long because it doesn't have a basis to it. It's not standing on firm ground. And so what I explain throughout my book, and I have this in the book as well, is that the whole ideology, this belief system of gender, is all based on falsehood, on sheker. It's like John Money's theory. It doesn't hold water. It doesn't have a firm basis because it is lies. And we have one lie after the next that has brought us to where we are right now. But I, trust me, I promise you, the ending of all this is coming. It's going to take some more time, but it's on its way. So do not lose hope.
And I'll stand with you here. And in the end, truth will win. I just want to say, Dr. Grossman, your work in the trenches, I hope you all understand, they attack Dr. Grossman every single day because doctors that speak out, they target. She's been in the room with these parents. She's been in the room with these children. And my prayer is that we'll have hundreds and thousands of doctors as courageous as Dr. Grossman that will stand up and speak out. God bless you, Dr. Grossman. Thank you so much, everybody. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.